Welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I'm your host, Tim Stuhlberger, writer and founder of Write LA, a script coaching and screenplay competition site. I don't know why I'm laughing, but I am. I find this very amusing, enjoyable. Joining me is the highly skilled and wildly opinionated writer, Tony Giambuso. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Just going to laugh the whole time.
I am. I think so.
That's fine.
Got to stop drinking. On this episode, I haven't had any to drink. On this episode, we're going to get a bit risque. Maybe that's why. I'm already blushing.
Yes, titillating.
Yes, and we're going to explain the similarities between writing and sex and how listening to us will help you improve both activities.
Ooh.
We'll take some questions, we'll share some movie moments and have some Aussie movie trivia. But first, let's get into talking about sex.
Yeah. Seems like you're excited about this, so
I am.
I'll let you lead.
One thing I realized when I was writing my book, which is, I need to go and get. So you talk about sex for a second and I'll go get my book when it's due. One thing, there are a lot of similarities between writing and sex because it's all about pleasure and the distribution of pleasure and the giving and receiving of pleasure and entertainment and enjoyment. And sex, much like writing, can be broken up, I think, into a couple of different styles. There is the sex you have by yourself and there is the sex you have with other people. Let's go with just one person for now because that's a whole other podcast. I mean, it can be many, but let's just go with one. The sex you have with yourself is different, I would argue, from the sex that you have with another person. The sex you have with yourself is all about you. The sex you have with yourself is all about you. And you can do whatever you want. You can, because it's just you're pleasing, you know what you like, and you can just self-indulge till the cows come home or until satisfaction is accomplished, achieved. The rocket has left the launch pad. It's all you, baby. Whereas sex with someone else, if you want to be any good at it, you're supposed to kind of care about the good time they're having. I would argue that the best sex is where you have two people who are focused on making sure the other person is enjoying themselves. Because if you're both doing that, you're both going to win. And I think all of us who have engaged in sex have had moments where or have had situations where they have felt like their partner was not necessarily interested in anything other than their own pleasure. And that's not a fun feeling, right? If you've ever had that feeling, you may not have. But if you have had that feeling, it's not a fun feeling. You kind of feel a bit taken advantage of and it's just and a bit like that person's a bit selfish and it's like, well, there was nothing in this for me. It was just all about you. And they're like, okay, I'm glad you had a good time, but I'm just left on the periphery of the sexual experience. So writing... I know that hopefully you're listening to this thinking, how is he applying this to writing?
Yeah.
Well, writing, there are a lot of scripts where people will say, you know, write what you know. And so a writer will be like, okay, I'm going to just write whatever the hell I want and the audience can go fuck themselves because my talent will shine. And if I'm entertained, you will therefore be entertained and everything will be fine. And often those scripts read like someone is self-pleasuring. It is a masturbatory exercise. They are clearly pleasing themselves. They are clearly not paying attention to pleasing anybody else. And it is just a wank. Whereas the scripts that do try to make the effort of like, well, I obviously have to please myself. It's important that I get some satisfaction from this experience because, you know, otherwise what am I doing? But I also want to make sure that the audience is having a good time as well. And then we all win. It's great for all of us.
So many times when I'm watching something, I think I feel like I'm in good hands. I feel like the creators, everyone involved, I just feel safe narratively. And you could apply that to sex as well.
Yes, absolutely.
You feel safe.
Everything we're talking about is applying to sex.
And the way I would talk about it is like, it's this thing that maybe sounds like a little pretentious, but it's ooh, craft.
Say it.
Yeah. It's like craft plus your truest self. So it's like you're, and that's sex as well. You're using craft. You're using like, oh, these are the literal physical things that work, that I have developed over time. And then,
right.
And then there's who you are as a person, how, what your style is, what your vibe is, what you like, the kind of, and that's why I think, and if we're talking about relationships, there's such things as, you know, sexual chemistry, mm-hmm. because it isn't just like, oh, these are the two best people at sex. Let's put them together and they're going to be great. It's mm-hmm. like, no, it's about chemistry. And so what you're trying to do essentially is create, when you're writing, is creating almost like a chemistry with the person on the other side. There's like there's you, and then there's your audience. And in between is like a script or yeah. a reader probably. Right. And then in between there's a script, and you're trying to strip away all of the stuff that is like superfluous, and just saying, how can I relate something to you on the other side of this in like it's in its truest form? And I'm giving you something. Now I also want to feel like like it's generous, right? I'm giving mm-hmm. you my emotions. I'm giving you my vulnerability. I'm giving you those things. And then you can relate them to your own experiences that are going to be completely different than mine. And we're going to sort of have this level of empathy between us,
yeah.
which is what, you know, that call and response of sex is yeah. like that. It's creating this chemistry or this unity. And
likewise, just to piggyback onto that, just not a sexual term, but could be. The idea of pandering too. Like if you are just giving.
Exactly.
If you're just like, well, just tell me what you want and I'll do it.
Yeah.
The other person often finds that unsatisfying. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, sure, okay, but I'd kind of like you to contribute something,
yeah.
you know, to bring something to the table. And what do you like to do? I'm not a, you know, total dick. So, and so that's the same in scripts. It's like when you are pandering to your audience, it's like, I'll give you whatever you want. The audience is like, we don't know what we want. We just want to be entertained or, you know, pleasured. So, you know, bring us your stuff. Show us what you got. It's okay. So that's part of the balance. It's not just a straight up, I'm just going to give, I'm not going to receive. It's, there's that balance. And mm-hmm. then likewise, if you are just, you know, and like you said, when there's two things I do really well, sexually speaking, it might not work on your current partner. Mm-hmm. She or he might be like, well, that's great that you use your tongue that way and you've had success in the past, but right now, for me, not so much. And for you to go, well, then there's something wrong with you
yeah.
because this works. Yeah. I know it works.
Yeah.
And if you're not getting pleasure from it, that's on you. That's not a healthy attitude, and yeah. it will not lead to a successful relationship. So that's the same in writing. If you get feedback where you're like, this part's not working, and I'm not getting it, and you get that from more than one person, and for you to be like, well, you don't get it. You don't understand
yeah.
because it's my mum thought it was great or my last partner thought it was great. And not that you're having sex with your mum, just to be clear, but you, that's you being stubborn and you getting in the way of everybody's enhanced enjoyment of the activity that you are currently engaging in.
And I think you avoid pandering by... which is your whole, I feel like your whole thesis of everything is your emotional connection to the script. You are, you can tell when a writer or creator is not emotionally connected to the material and they're just saying, here, whatever, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Then this happens, it doesn't matter. You can feel that in the material as opposed to the writer really feeling strongly about something and being connected to something. And like I said, when they're feeling connected and they are giving you that vulnerability. And so, yes, it is all about them. It's my thing that I'm doing, but I'm being open and vulnerable about it so that when you read it, you feel like I'm not holding back, or I'm not just like, well, this is like a cool fight scene. Like, it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
It's like, well, what does it mean? Like, what are you, you know, why this versus any other one?
Yeah. So. And I was particularly cute in my scene description. Therefore, you must love me.
Yes.
I wrote in my book. Actually, that's why I grabbed my book. And I don't normally like to talk about the book that I wrote, but it's called The Audience and You, A Guide to Writing Screenplays with Emotional Impact, now available on Amazon. Please tell your friends. Mm-hmm. There is a chapter about this where I talk about the sex thing. And I said, I just said, being skillful at self-pleasuring does not make you a master of sex with other people. And this is the part that I wanted to mention. Sex with, hang on. Sex with others requires additional skills like listening, less ego, respect, and an open mind, and some degree of understanding about what it takes to give, not just to receive. And I think all of those things apply to writing. I'll say them again. Less ego, respect, an open mind, listening, and some degree of understanding about what it takes to give, not just to receive. So the listening part's really important. And mm-hmm. I think that applies to sex because if your partner's going, I don't really care for that, and if you're getting feedback that says, I don't really care for that, how you handle that goes a long way to how successful you will be as a partner and as a writer. And listening and ego and balancing that ego when you're writing is really important because you have to listen to what people are telling you, and then you have to interpret that in your with your and let your ego on the side for a minute and say, okay, they're not attacking me or they're not criticizing me. It's just the work. I'm going to listen and I'm going to have an open mind and I'm going to see if I can interpret what they're saying and make my script better, because all they want is to make the script better, unless they're an asshole, in which case you will probably know that and you can write them off.
Yeah.
Or unless they're paying, if they're an asshole and they've already written you a check, then you just do the best you can because you're getting paid.
Yeah. Or like Sean said, don't be an asshole. So if you're the person being the asshole, just don't do that.
Right, exactly. So they're very important traits to have as a writer as you're trying to navigate this industry is you do have to have a solid sense of self, otherwise you get battered, but not to the point where it gets in the way of your listening and having an open mind. And exactly the same applies to sex. So less masturbating, more enjoyment of having sex with a partner and the intimacy and the connection that comes with that. Both in sex and in writing, and things will improve.
I think we just opened up the amount of genre feeds we can be on now as a podcast. It's like screenwriting, entertainment.
And sex ed.
Lifestyle, sex ed.
Totally. Yeah. We're here all week. Tip your waiters. Happy to talk about that. Because yeah. I think there are a lot of sexes are really, it's not rocket science, but it's amazing how many people let their pride and their ego get in the way. And writing is exactly the same.
It can also be really fun and it can also be really profound and both can be equally as valuable.
It could also feel cheap and ugly and awful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk about a movie moment.
Oh, okay. I'm going to talk about the two movies that when I was a kid, here's a little thing that you don't know about me or you do. When I was a kid, I hated movies, hated them. They scared me. I didn't like being in an audience with people. Felt very uncomfortable. I got taken to see a lot of the Herbie movies because I'm that old. You know, Herbie the Love Bug.
I'm from the Fully Loaded generation.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was the original ones. And the audience would laugh and I would be horrified, just uncomfortable, didn't like movies at all. And there were two movies that changed everything and set me on the path that I'm on today. Do you want to know what they are? Please. And I saw them first time, first release in the movie theater, got dragged to both of them probably, and came out thinking, oh my goodness, this is what movies can do. Original Star Wars.
Yep, classic.
And Grease.
Mm.
They were very similarly released in Australia. I don't think there was a big gap. Two very different films. I can't tell you why for either one of them because I'm not a big sci-fi nerd and nor am I a musicals guy, having just seen Wicked. But I think what it was, what I tell myself is I think those two movies were different from other films that I'd seen. I'd seen dumb comedies or kids movies at that point because I was, 11 when I saw these films. And I think they showed me the possibilities of cinema. That in a dark room, how you can be transported to a different time and place and get involved in characters who are radically different from anything I'd experienced. So it wasn't like, oh, I really identify with any of it because I didn't. I think I just noticed the power of cinema. And so those two movie moments, those films really changed, probably changed my life and were very profound.
Those are profound, life-changing movies. I can imagine seeing that for the first time. And both of them are like, comets, you know, that there's just, it was like, we didn't know what they could be. I mean, obviously Grease was based on a famous thing, but it was way bigger than anyone could imagine. Star Wars obviously was not expected to be still today in 2025, you know, very, very valuable.
Well, it opened the door to the whole everything, the whole mm-hmm. sci-fi action movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just moved genre. It created a genre, really, that yep. hasn't really it's been like fully explored.
Western, sci-fi Western.
Yeah, kind of and thing. The big kind of event yeah. type movies. And Grease, yeah. I mean, yes, it was a successful musical, but they added songs. They had the Bee Gees involved, who were white hot at that point. It had Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta at the absolute peak. And it was this little engine that could. It was a stupid, I mean, they're all, what, 35 playing mm-hmm. 18-year-olds? I mean, it had no business yeah. being successful, and yet it struck a chord that both of them continue today. Yours?
Yeah, so I want to talk about the movie Lady Bird and Greta Gerwig.
Okay.
I think Lady Bird is like a perfect movie. I'm going positive on this one.
Yeah.
And what I think is so good about it is while it is sort of a classic, you know, tale of a teenager and, you know, when her issues and all of that, like a kind of a dramedy. I think what Greta Gerwig does in writing that character is that she is not afraid to make Lady Bird very almost unlikable. Like it's a proxy for herself. It's sort of autobiographical. And she does the thing that I see a lot of people do when they're writing something autobiographical. She does the opposite. And often people leave their characters at arm's length mm-hmm. and they attempt to pathologize the character. And ultimately there's this undercurrent of, yeah, but she had it pretty bad, didn't she? And she was actually like really good underneath it all. And she's just like, no, Lady Bird is, you know, she's all the things. She's vulnerable and she's kind and she's horrible and she's selfish. But the movie is never saying, feel bad for her, feel bad for her, feel bad for her. It's showing, you know, this great mother-daughter relationship and as well as other relationships. But there's never a catharsis where the mom and the daughter at the end say, oh, I figured it out. And they hug. It's like there is a set. They never have that together. We see them separately feel, you know, guilty or regretful about their relationship. And Lady Bird doesn't come out at the end being, you know, the hero. She's just a person. She's a vulnerable person. And I think that applies in an earlier episode. You were talking about side characters with Notting Hill. I think the side character, the supporting characters in that movie as well, feel very well-rounded and they feel very authentic. But ultimately, I use that movie as an example when I'm talking to other writers about if they're writing something that is based on themselves, which I know we have our reservations about. But mm-hmm. It's
your challenge.
If you're doing it, you have to really be vulnerable. And I've done this before. I've written a story that was about me and the character. I might have talked about this in a yeah. former podcast, but yeah,
a breakup movie.
Yeah, it wasn't until I stepped back and said, okay, like, yes, instead of me writing it saying, oh, isn't the world against me and terrible, I was able to look at it and say, oh, you're being narcissistic, you're being myopic, you're being shitty. And so I can also infuse those emotions into it that are those feelings so people can relate to that character because they're like, oh, I'm undercooked as well. I'm vulnerable. I'm wrong. As opposed to what we talked about with Cliffhanger a few episodes ago, where it was like, oh, he's vulnerable because he's, I don't know, perfect, you know? And it's like, well, I'm not perfect. So I'm not really relating to that character as much as I would like to.
Yeah. No, I think that's so,
Greta. I think she's going to make it.
Yeah, I think she's, I don't know what else she's done, but I think she's done okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The autobiographical stuff, it's more about the feelings. I was just thinking about that driving in, actually, that it's like, what do I want to write about and what am I thinking about? And I'm not thinking about how do I put Tim in a movie. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, maybe I do it about an animal or, you know, like yeah. something like the metaphor stuff. Like you can still infuse your characters with stuff that really, really mean something to you. It's just not you.
No.
It's the, you know, that's what movies are fun about. Okay.
All right. I got some questions for you from the audience. Let's see. Jonathan asks, how do you feel about the adage that every scene should contain an emotional change, such as from high to low or low to high? For the record, this is all, he's just spit all over my face.
This is the sex episode. We're getting way off track. No, I don't. I think that's a template, and that is unnecessary stress that you do not need to worry about. I don't even know what that means. High point to low point. I mean, that's just, I feel like that's jargon for jargon's sake. That's like when you go into a meeting and they talk about, you know, all those business words that they use. Mm-hmm. That's one of those. I really couldn't even tell you what an emotional high point to low point and why you should have it in every scene. No, that's way too much pressure on yourself. No, I will say every scene should have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Every scene should, and you should know what that purpose is. And it should either, as I have said a lot, it only has to either reveal something new about a character or propel the story forward. So if you can do that in an emotional way, great. You know, if you can think about how you execute, but as long as you know what your scene is delivering to the audience, that's more important than any of that other jargon crap.
Yeah, I think it's a feel thing. I agree, it's jargon. It's sort of like developing the craft, watching a lot of movies, reading a lot of scripts, writing a lot of scripts, and you just have this feel for, yes, any movie is going to have its highs and lows. You can feel, or TV show, you can feel the rhythm where things are, and that's that like tension release, or big and calm, and that's just like a feel. It doesn't have to literally be every scene.
No.
And also we think of scenes, I think of scenes often in terms of sequences. So I'm not sitting there diagramming my scripts and drawing like a plus and a minus and an up and a graph. You can just feel if I have, you know, 30 pages that feel like a straight line and there's not things going high and low, I'm going to notice that, and other people are going to notice that. But they'll probably just say, it got pretty boring between page 40 and page 80. And right. I'm like, oh, because I'm not dancing, you know?
Yeah, stuff was just happening.
Stuff was just happening and it wasn't. So yeah, I don't think it needs to be as clearly not as prescriptive as every single scene needs this. But it is something that in the back of your head, you can say, well, yes, of course I want my roller coaster to, there's going to be moments when it slowly goes up and then it's going to go down and then it's going to have some turns and we want to be cognizant of that, but I don't think it needs to be like front of mind. I think it's just a feel. Watch some movies and then think of your script as a movie, because that's what you want it to be.
Yes. No, I'm not into the jargon, and there's so much when you're a writer starting out and you read a lot of the books and you get a lot of this jargon and it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So let that one go, Jonathan.
Yeah. All right. So this is a sort of a collective composite question about character descriptions and just talking about character descriptions when we're introducing characters, not like literally like, do you bold them or this, but just sort of how much information do you give? What are some best practices? If you could talk to that.
By the way, that this new thing about making your log line, your scene headings bold, is it occupying a lot of attention and unnecessarily? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
So,
In terms of like, should you or not?
Yeah, I'm getting questions from that from people. Like, should I put it in bold? Who cares? What was the question? Characters. Pretty, but she doesn't know it.
Yeah.
Should never appear in your screenplay ever.
Yeah.
Nor should a description of a woman's breasts, unless they are in some way instructive to the movie, like her breasts are registered lethal weapons, or she takes people out, or she breaks windows, or something. or they talk, or I don't know what the hell. but pretty, but she doesn't know it. I see it far too regularly still, and it's a sexist, or B, and always written by a man. B, I don't know if you've met anybody who's pretty. Maybe you haven't, but I mean, Tony and I are pretty, so we know. they know it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a critical way. They know it. Everybody tells them from a young age. They are aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that, so that line is wrong on every level. And it instantly brands your script as not handling the female characters in a way that will be encouraging and entertaining to all.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a diplomatic way of me saying what we all know I'm saying. So
don't do that. I also know something that you that grinds your gears on character description is telling us things that we couldn't possibly see or know.
Oh, scene description cheating. Oh my God, yes, that's huge. The amount of people I see writing in a script, you know, Barbara, 27, just graduated from NYU and is really interested in math. And what we're seeing is a lady sitting in a coffee shop drinking a coffee.
Yeah.
We the audience, couldn't possibly know anything about her by what we are seeing in the movie. And you should be treating your script as if it is a movie. And I call that cheating. And it's actually, everybody calls it cheating. When you use scene description and character description to deliver information that the audience couldn't possibly know from what you're showing them, mm-hmm. you are cheating. So it's your job as a screenwriter, not a novelist, mm-hmm. to also thinking where they have thoughts. Like, she's also really sad about the recent death of her cat. And one prime example was I saw this this scene once where this person leaves their house, walks to the car to drive to church. That was the scene as written. And it's like there was no indication that they were driving to church. All we saw was a person leaving the house, and driving. We don't know where they're going. But there were 17 different ways you could have shown the audience where they were going. They could be holding a Bible. They could have said, "Bye, Mom, I'm off to church."
Yeah.
They could be holding a rosary bead. They could be adjusting the little Jesus thing on their windshield if you want to show that they're religious. Whatever.
Or does it matter? No. They just... and next scene, they arrive at church.
Oh, the next scene, they arrive at church. So, and in which case, why are you showing them getting into the car unless there's something important?
Exactly.
There? So the way you describe characters, don't overdo it. We don't, and we certainly don't need their costume. We need a loose, like they're dressed formally, they're dressed casually. Unless the costume is important, like they're wearing mm-hmm. a scuba diving gear because they're about to go into the water. If it's really important, sure, but don't have to talk about the shoe. It can be expensive shoes, not a particular brand, because mm-hmm. again, the costume people are going to handle that. All you need to do is prick our imagination of the reader, is get our imaginations fired up with as few words as possible, especially with a character, as few words as possible, because we don't want to slog through a paragraph describing a character. We want to get into what the hell's going on in your script.
I see it when I'm reading scripts for Red LA, I see a lot of overly clever character descriptions, and it's sort of word soup mm-hmm. and it's so clever, and even if it's technically accurate and it follows all the rules or doesn't break any rules, it's sort of I have to read it 5 times to say, what are you actually saying about this character, and can you maybe just let the character behave, and then I can learn some of these things. So what do I absolutely need to know in this moment? And also just specificity. I mean, I will say, in terms of the shoes line, if someone was, you know, they're wearing, you know, everything Old Navy, which mm-hmm. no shade on Old Navy, but with Dolce and Gabbana shoes.
Okay.
You'd say, oh, okay, well, I know that's very expensive shoes, and these are kind of not, what is happening here? And mm-hmm. that might be something important about the character.
Yep.
If it's not, and it's just random, then I don't need to know it. It's just like we were talking about the fight scenes thing in the last episode. It's well, what is important? And then you can also, you have the entire script to tell me more about this character.
Yep.
So tell me what's important in this moment, what I need to know, and then let's sort
just
of
just the bare minimum to get us going.
Yeah,
that's all we need. You can fill in the blanks after that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Okay. Aussie trivia.
Yeah.
Do you know what the highest grossing Australian film is?
Is it Mad Max?
Well, no. Crocodile Dundee.
Okay.
I suppose some of the new Mad Maxes might, but in terms of general thing, it was Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
Which made a profound impact on the way Americans saw Australians, I have to say, because I was in America before Crocodile Dundee and then after, and I was treated with suspicion before and love after. Anyway, small quick anecdote, because I know we're short on time. Crocodile Dundee was directed by a man named John Cornell and starred Paul Hogan. Both Paul Hogan and John Cornell were friends of my father's, who was a producer of a TV show called A Current Affair, where actually Paul Hogan got his start. He would do Friday evening funny sketches. So Dad helped launch Paul Hogan's career. I was a teenager wanting to get into writing. I was working as a waiter, and I came home and I was living at the house, and Dad said, "Oh, you," I said, "what'd you do today, Dad?" "Oh, I had lunch, had some people come over." "So who came over?" "Oh, John Cornell." I was like, "What, the director of Crocodile Dundee?" "Yeah." "And you didn't tell me?" "Well, you were busy, you had work."
Yeah, that's something you tell someone about.
So there you go. Yeah, that was my almost moment with John Cornell. So that's it for this sexually charged episode of Scriptmate, which is brought to you by Write LA, a website where you can get all sorts of information about writing, learn about my script feedback services, which I do, and get the details for our annual screenplay competition, Write LA, which is currently open for entries and is open until March the 4th, so not long now. Go to write-la.com for the details. There is a special discount code for you as a listener of this podcast. The code word for a 10% discount is...
Pod.
Pod.
P-O-D.
Pod. It works on the entry portals, Coverfly, Film Freeway, and our own website. Again, the code word is pod. Our theme music pod. Our theme music was written and performed by the Australian band The Swarm. A big thanks to them. And our beautiful graphic was designed by my very talented daughter, Claire Schildberger. Thanks for listening. We are grateful. If you have a question you want answered, email me at tim@write-la.com. That's also where you can find me if you want to know about my feedback services. We'll be back soon. But for now, say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.